Everybody, good morning, good afternoon, good night, whichever daytime, nighttime, or time at all that you're listening to us. It is currently 10:20 my time, 9:20 Harris's time over in Peoria, Illinois, that we're recording this episode. A little bit of a late start to this podcast, but Harris had some things he had to do earlier today. But here we are, young lads, Peter DeFee, Harris Eisenberg with you, talking a little bit of MLB baseball, and we'll get into some college baseball a little later on today. I am in my new fangled studio of my bedroom instead of just being out in the living room. Harris has got the Yankee flag in the background. We'll talk a little bit about some Yankees Rays later on in this episode, I should say, because that was a big series, especially that Sunday game. It was weird. But Harris, how you feeling after a week? I saw that you tweeted out that the Peoria Chiefs swept a six-game series for the first time since the minor leagues went to a six-game series.
Yeah, I think it's pretty fair to say that the Peoria Chiefs are on a heater. It's fun to call winning baseball. We're having a good time at the yard, and things are great. You know, a little bit of a tune-up today before we start another home series. So in the middle of a 12-game homestand right now, so it's fun. And for viewer purposes, like you said, had to come on a little late tonight. You saying that it's 9:20 my time, still really weird for me. Miss everybody over on the East Coast. But yeah, we're cooped up in a nice little studio apartment, sitting on a futon with a Yankee flag in the background, and I've elected to go muzzy here today, which I'll probably shave off after the episode. So, you know, we're rolling, and it's fun.
Yeah, speaking of Yankee flag in the background, I don't know if you're a Knicks fan, but I know my night's a lot better because the Heat beat the Knicks, and they're up 3-1 in that series, so that's a plus. So sorry, Harris.
I know, can't really say I'm huge into the NBA. For those who know me really well, know that I don't even like the NBA. And for reference, the other night I needed to put a game on because there was no Stanley Cup playoffs, and I said, you know what, let's put on the Suns and whoever they're playing. I think it was the Nuggets. And to be honest with you, I didn't watch a single second of that game, and I had the whole second half on my TV. So, yeah, you know, New York's cool when the Knicks are good, but it's about time they get done.
Well, let's get to the things that really matter. That was the Yankees and Rays series. First, the Rays sweep the Pittsburgh Pirates, and other than at the time of recording this podcast, they won today. Mitch Keller threw a complete game shutout against the Colorado Rockies, so they're now back in the win column. But before that, it was an 8-game losing streak for the Pirates after they went in and got swept by the Rays. Really good series overall. McClanahan started off hot, game one, one-run baseball, and then just pitching after that. Zach Eflin, really good. And then let's talk about the big series, the Yankees series. A lot of people were questioning whether or not the Rays were for real. They said the Yankees were going to be that real first test. And look, they took 2 out of 3. And it wasn't an easy 2 out of 3. They took that game one, you know, kind of looked like it was going to be a blowout until Harrison Bader, who had 7 RBIs for the Yankees in this series, comes up clutch and gets a 3-run home run, ties it up, but then some bad defense by the Yankees and Jake Bowers out there in left field cost them a run. The Rays win game one, and then game two, kind of thought it was going to be a bit of the same as game one. Rays are up 2-0, and then all of a sudden Harrison Bader just hits a bloop single in the right field. They end up getting 3 runs, and was the final score 3-2?
It was 3-2.
And then really, let's talk about Sunday, because Sunday you have your horse and Gerrit Cole, and I'm going to bring up the numbers here again for that. But you had your horse Gerrit Cole. It was 6-0 at one point, and then all of a sudden Jose Siri hits a home run, makes it 6-1. You're like, all right, you know, Gerrit Cole's going to give up 1 run this game. They're still going to win the game 6-1, 8-1, whatever it was, whatever you thought. And then all of a sudden, just out of nowhere, I think it was 6-1, and I took a shower. I was like, you know, I'm just going to take a shower, you know, kind of wash it off, you know, metaphorically. And then I come out at 6-6, and I'm like, what just happened? And Christian Bethencourt's what happened. And then Jose Siri stealing third, scoring on that single, or not the single, but the putout 1-3. and it's 7-6, and then just chaos ensues. And you know, Harris, I know you're a little bit of a transplant now, so you kind of root for the Rays. But what was going through your mind come that sixth inning?
You know, I'm personally not allowed to bet on baseball, but if there is any game that I would suggest someone bet on the New York Yankees, it was supposed to be Sunday, because the Yankees, up until Sunday, had not lost in a game that Gerrit Cole started. It's the only investment that's been well worth the money, not including Judge, but we'll get into that in another time. But yeah, you know, this was just, you know, Gerrit Cole ultimately had his first stinker of the year. You can't get on him and say, oh, he makes $32 million a year. He's supposed to be perfect every time. We're all human beings here. You know, we have our bad days. Gerrit Cole had himself, you know, a bad ending of the outing. You know, Christian Bethencourt hit that home run towards the end of his outing. And it's just, man, you know. And for me, I kind of look at it from both sides. And obviously the Yankees, you know, didn't get the bounces in that game. And also it just goes to show how good the Tampa Bay Rays are. I think they're fun. They're flashy. You know, we've seen that. They got guys who like to gloat, talk a little crap. I like it. I think they got a cool swagger about them this year to where they can finally stand up against the Yankees. And they showed that on Sunday, that they have the ability to come back even when down big against one of the best pitchers, debatably, in all of baseball right now. So just as it's unraveling, it's just, man, you know, this is just what the Yankee season is about right now. It just really is. And sometimes you got to tip your cap. And you tip your cap to the Rays, because that's a game that really you get to show your true colors if you're a baseball team down in a hole like that. The Tampa Bay Rays really did show that they were for real.
Yeah, and Gerrit Cole finishes it with 5 innings, 8 hits, 6 runs. Only 5 of them earned because there was an error by Gleyber Torres. I forgot what that error was on, though.
I don't exactly remember what it was. I don't remember the exact plays. Again, I was calling my own game, so I didn't really get to see most of it. And I was also listening to Andy and Neil when I was keeping track of it, so wasn't able to see it.
Anyways, yeah, Gerrit Cole balloons his ERA to a rousing 2.09.
Wow.
So didn't suffer the loss, though, because when he came out of the game, it was 6-6. And then the runner that scored was his run, I believe. But they charged that to Peralta. I just looked. I don't think that was charged to him. So he wasn't going to come out with a loss anyway. So his perfect 6-0 is still a perfect 6-0. But it was just one of those games that, like, Cole was just cruising along. And last year, was able to see Cole pitch in Tropicana Field. And we saw that when he got going, And the Yankee fans were behind him. And going on a little tangent here real quick before we go into anything else, it was really nice to see that Tropicana Field opened up their upper deck. And you had 32,000 people there, whether they were, you know, 30,000 Yankee fans and then 2,000 Rays fans, whatever the number was. It was nice to see that there was 32,000 people there cheering on, and the atmosphere felt electric, especially on the radio, listening to the crowd mics that they had there. It was a really fun experience, it seemed like.
Again, I've mentioned this to you plenty of times, and I've mentioned it to people that ask about my experience when I was down in Tampa last summer. Tampa is an awesome sports town, and debatably the best sports town in the nation with Boston. How much they love their teams there. And now that the Rays have gotten off to this historic start, maybe it's a sign that people finally want to make that trek over the bridge to come see them, especially when they play the Yankees. And I know it was probably half Yankee fans there, or maybe, you know, 60-40 or whatnot. But still, it's so good to have that community, the Tampa Bay community, behind their team, because you see the way they get behind the Lightning. And the Lightning, for the first time in a while, are not playing in May. The Bucks are slightly irrelevant right now with Tom Brady retired and Baker Mayfield's now the quarterback. So what better way to support a sports team than a team that's having a very historic start to the year and, you know, is beating teams like the Yankees and beating good clubs like the Orioles. And, you know, there's a reason why fans should come out, man. It's Tampa. It's a great environment. We all know what the Trop is like when it's buzzing. It's a fun place to be, and the team's really fun. I think Randy Arozarena is part of it, too. He's a draw. You know, he was much watched TV in the WBC. So, yeah, it's, for me personally, I think it's awesome to see it.
Yeah, and I mean, I was talking to my dad, too. I was like, even if you don't open up the upper deck for the weekday games, at least open it up for a Friday, Saturday, Sunday series. Because a lot of the Friday, Saturday, Sunday series, like you have Atlanta coming in on the weekend, you have the Dodgers in on the weekend, you have, you know, the Yankees, Red Sox, Orioles, Blue Jays, you know, a lot of the big name teams coming in on the weekend. So why not open up that upper deck and just get as many fans as possible? Because they have not had 32,000 fans in there probably since 2019. When they played the Astros and it was sold out. I don't even know if they had that many in 2021 when they had those first two games at home against Boston in the ALDS. Maybe they did. Maybe I'm just, you know, misremembering, but like it doesn't seem like they've had that many people in there since they played the Astros in that LDS in 2019.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you. I mean, maybe the 2021 playoffs, but I mean, for a regular season game, it's been over 5 years since they've had that many. All the tweets are, you know, the historic crowd at the Trop because they opened those seats in the upper deck. So, you know, I'm excited for Rays fans. I think it's great. I know you say what you want about the Trop. It's still, you know, the Tampa Bay region. It's a dome. It's 72 in there all the time, so you don't have to worry about weather. You got solid food. Shout out Footlong Tater Tot out in center field. You know, you got your options if you're at the Trop, man. Seriously, you really do. Say what you want about it, but when you got a good ballpark, I don't care where they're playing. They could be playing in Oakland. Fans could still show.
Yeah, and I mean, listening to the game today, or tonight, I should say, at the time of this recording, also, the Rays did win 3-0. So they're 6-1 in May. So the gauntlet that was supposed to be May so far has gone off to a pretty rousing start for the Rays. But, you know, Andy and Neil even talked about it a little bit. They're like, everybody that says they hate the Trop goes to the Trop and they're like, this is a pretty good ballpark. Like, I could watch, you know, 81 games in this ballpark and it's always going to be 71 degrees or 72 degrees. And it's always going to be comfortable and it's a good stadium. Like, it looks bad from the outside, but once you're in the inside, nobody cares about the outside. You're not watching the game outside. You're watching it inside where the field is.
Love how Steve Carney always calls it on Twitter, the old gray lady on South 16th Street. I think it's a perfect nickname for it. Now, you know, I'm not going to go on a rant and, you know, talk about criticizing the Trop here. But, you know, if you walk in the home plate gate blindfolded, are you going to know you're at a baseball stadium? Probably not. But once you get in the seats, baseball field's a field. The grass is green. The dirt's brown. I personally think they have some pretty cool turf. I mean, we got to step on it. You know, dome's in, which means the sound stays in the ballpark. Place gets loud. You got the 8 billion times they play the cowbell thing over and over again on the PA. I like it. I think it's great. I think the atmosphere around it's cool, especially because, you know, that lower bowl concourse area where you get to walk around the entire stadium and still have a view of the game. Think is something that a lot of ballparks honestly don't have. So there's some aspects to the Trop that still stadiums don't have. And I know Stu Sternberg still wants to make improvements to the building before they get the new one. So, you know.
Yeah, they've been talking about making some improvements to it. I'll be interested to see what they say about that and then see what the new stadium looks like. I think as long as it's at least a retractable dome to where in June, July, and August, you can keep it 72 degrees in there. I think fans will be happy. I'd be a lot more happy if it was on the Tampa side of Tampa Bay. But that's,
I think
that's
everyone would be happy if it was on that side. I think, you know, we've both seen it. You obviously longer than I have, but you know, the Lightning are on that side, the Bucks are on that side, and obviously the St. Petersburg Clearwater Island, whatever you want to call it, is just not as densely populated as the other side, which also connects Orlando and Lakeland and all those other towns. You know Florida geography better than I do, but you know, just from what I've heard, obviously Tampa with all the businesses on that side would obviously make a lot more sense. But whatever they do, even if they do build it on the St. Pete side, you have 32,000 people filling the seats on a weekend against the Yankees. If you build a destination on the St. Pete side, that's a place where people want to be, people will come. You know, will it be better if it's on the Tampa side? Yes, absolutely. But I think it'll also draw the business to St. Pete Clearwater area that, you know, I think the Rays have partnered up with that community really well over their years there. So wherever they put it, I think it'll be fine.
Did you, speaking of Orlando, did you see that Orlando wants a baseball team?
I did not see that.
They're trying to gear up for an expansion team over in Orlando. I don't know how well that's going to play out.
What would you name the Orlando baseball team? Because I got a couple ideas.
Man, what would I?
If it were up to me.
Go ahead.
If it were up to me, I'd just name them the Orlando Roller Coasters.
All right.
Because of all the amusement.
We're done with this.
Or the Orlando Monorails, you know? I mean, the only thing I know in Orlando is the Kennedy Space Center, which is in like Port Canaveral, so it's not even Orlando, and all the amusement parks. I mean, I've been to a good old Universal. You know, imagine the Universal Globe in the background, and you build a ballpark right outside that big Universal Globe. You can call them the Orlando Despicable Me's or something.
No, you'd have to go something with Disney, like how the Orlando Magic play on Disney. I was just like.
But then Disney has to own the team because Disney not only owns the park, but they also own a pretty cool cruise line too.
Yeah, but I don't know if I don't think Disney owns the Magic. I know they sponsor the Magic.
No way they own the Magic.
Yeah, no. So it'd have to be something like that. But like, I'm trying to think because you could probably do like the Orlando Knights and do something based off like UCF too. Like I think that'd be. That'd be pretty cool. Like, you got the Knights and the Magic. You don't have a football team yet.
What about the No, you can't call them the Orlando Tinkerbells. Obviously, what's the character's name in Frozen?
Olaf.
Yeah. And then every seventh inning, instead, you know, after Take Me Out to the Ball Game, you know how every place, like, you know, the Baltimore Orioles play Country Roads, Take Me Home after the seventh inning stretch, Take Me Out to the Ball Game. You can have all the fans sing Let It Go after every seventh inning. I think it'd be fantastic. Now, I'm not a Frozen guy, but I mean, you know, the little kiddos, the young juniors, you know, they love that.
Oh, so you're talking about more like Elsa, because that's who sings it.
Yeah.
Olaf is the snowman. I thought that's where you were going.
I mean, they're both kind of the same. It's the same movie.
Yeah.
I never watched it, so I don't know.
See, I'm a big Disney freak, so I've watched all of them.
So you know better than me. I'm rattling off names here. You're trying to figure out the best one.
I'm trying to think, too. I don't know. I got nothing.
Give it the Orlando Monorails. You could have monorails, like, ride people into the ballpark.
What would the City Connect be? Would it just be, like, a big monorail going across the chest?
That's what I'm thinking, you know? Got a little scooter coaster, you know? You could even have it move, you know? Like a monorail can go around the outside of the ballpark when a home run's hit. How dope would that be?
So like how the Astros have the train.
Yeah. And it wouldn't be cheating because it's just a concept. And we're not trying to win ball games with it. And it also would span the entire outfield. See, I'm designing the team here.
There you go. Put it in a team builder. Speaking of City Connect, so did you see the Baltimore Orioles and Cincinnati City Connects leaked?
I have not.
It's basically so for the Baltimore Orioles, I saw today, it's basically just a black jersey with white script Baltimore on it. There's nothing different.
Oh, God, that's atrocious.
You see what I'm saying?
I will say the one thing I do like about it is the collar at the top is kind of like that Marylandish flag. But that is That's awful. I mean, they could have done so many other things. You know, the Orioles, in my opinion, have had some of the cleanest jerseys over the last number of years, and they decide to go with that. At least make it orange.
Let's see if I can find a leak and show the audience what we're talking about. So, for everybody at home, let's see if I can do this. So, for everybody at home, that is what we're talking about, what we're looking at. And Harris said the collar at the top is kind of like the Maryland flag. But that's basically the City Connect jersey. And then let me see if I can't find the Cincinnati Reds one. But it was more just like
had a UMD kid design it.
But it was more like a just like a t-shirt that somebody hung up. So I guess it's no, that's not the right one. All right, I can't find it, but review. I did find it.
The Cincinnati Reds one's a big review because we do have a fan of the show, Steve Versnick, who's huge into Cincinnati everything. So if we end up finding this somehow, or if Steve is listening, which we hope he is, king of the pickup line, Steve Versnick, just, you know.
Has he listened to the first two episodes?
I don't know. That's a question for you. You're closer to him than I am.
I don't know either, but look, I just found something online that I think would be awesome for a City Connect jersey for the Reds. You ready?
All right. The Queen City.
Queen City.
Is that what Cincinnati's nickname is? The Queen City?
Yeah.
Because Charlotte, North Carolina's got the same nickname too.
But I think when Cincinnati does their City Connects, they got to go all out because they're the first professional baseball team ever. So like they have to do something. Because they used to be called the Cincinnati Red Stockings, so like they got to have like a play on that.
Really want them to incorporate the logo where like the mascot that kind of looks like Mr. Met, but he's got the mustache.
Oh yeah!
Imagine if you had like seams running up the sides, and you just had the Reds with the little mustache that underlines the Reds.
See, that'd be cool if you could have like you could have Cincinnati Red Stockings, and for the T you could have like maybe like the mustache.
Yeah. Yeah, we're getting creative here. I like it.
I mean, we should be part of the creative teams for some of these organizations.
Yeah, honestly, you know, broadcasting, just throw it away. I'm for graphic design now. Let's do it.
So now let's move it over to this though. From one central team to the other. We got the Cardinals. Did you see what they did with Wilson Contreras where they're gonna bench him now? Or they're not benching him completely, but they're relieving him of his catching duties. And they're going to be playing him more as a DH and a little bit of the outfield, but I think they took that back today. And at the time of this recording, he has a couple of hits against the Cubs. I don't know if they've won yet or not. They were winning 2-1 after his RBI double in the sixth inning. I can look right now as they ended up winning 3-1. And in Contreras's, I guess, homecoming game, he goes 2-for-4 with 2 RBIs, and he's batting .273. So the bat's still there for Wilson Contreras, but apparently the glove has not been there behind the plate because they rattled off a couple of stats of ERAs, and it was like Jordan Montgomery has a 6 ERA with Contreras and a 2 ERA with Kinsner. Same thing with Wainwright. Same thing with Flaherty. It's like all these just seismic shifts in the ERA department. And it's got to make fans wonder, like, did we just spend $100 million on somebody that's not going to catch anymore? And he's just a glorified DH? Because that's a lot of money to spend on somebody that's just going to DH when you brought him in to be the replacement for Yadier Molina. And he's been calling Yadi to try to figure out some things. I guess players have been calling Yadi to kind of complain about Contreras, but it's got to be kind of weird to be a fan right now of the Cardinals and just kind of going to to the front office like, hey, what did we just do?
So I was reading an article before we came on about the whole situation. And really, the big standout issues with the Cardinals are all a trickle-down effect of a battery mate catching. Jordan Hicks, who has been basically a failed experiment ever since he got called up to the big leagues, has a whip of 2.20. And for a guy who throws 104, it's terrible. Miles Michaelis has a whip of 1.7 and has allowed the most hits in all of baseball. Contreras is also dealing with a lot of things that are numbers that are up from last year. His arm's not the same, and also he has gotten thrown 13 wild pitches throughout the first 5-6 weeks of the year. Last year he only had to deal with 22 wild pitches behind the plate. So there's clearly a problem when it comes to Contreras calling the game itself. That is clearly evident. For a guy like Miles Michaelis, who we've seen is really good, and I know he had to rehab for a while, but the fact that he's given up the most hits in all of baseball, I mean, Miles Michaelis has been one of your more consistent arms over the last number of years. That's staggering. But, I mean, the crazy thing is that they have Wilson Contreras. They have Nolan Arenado. They have Paul Goldschmidt. And yet, it's not enough. You have two borderline three MVP caliber players on your team. I mean, Nolan Arenado went through a stretch in April where he was 4-43. I mean, that tells you the story right there of what the problem is. You hope it's that it's just a bad April. Finally got Adam Wainwright back this past weekend, but I don't know how much an aging Adam Wainwright, how much of a difference he's going to make. You know, Jordan Walker, I think, was a curious send down and DFA situation where he starts the season with an 11-game hitting streak as a rookie, and then not only do they send him back down to AAA Memphis, but they DFA him in order to manipulate his service time, which is a conversation for another time, which is ridiculous.
I didn't know they DFA'd him. I just thought they sent him down.
I thought they sent him down too, but the people I know said they DFA'd him. I don't exactly know. People told me that he got DFA'd. I find that really hard to believe, considering the guy's got options.
And I think if you DFA him, you have to put him on waivers, and somebody can claim him.
I would assume so. I would assume that's the case.
You're taking him off the 40, man.
Let's see.
Yeah, I don't
know. So he's on the 40. So he definitely didn't get DFA'd. Whoever told me that, apologies for saying that. But he is on the 40-man roster, and now he's back in the minors. I mean, he had a solid start to the year. He's hit 274 with a couple of homers for the big club. But now he's back down to Memphis, and in 9 games for Memphis, he's doing okay. He's hitting a .182 with a homer, so he's not doing all that well. Former Peoria Chief, by the way, Jordan Walker. It's Jordan Walker bobblehead night this upcoming Saturday. But besides the fact that you let this dude only play 20 games, and he hit close to 300, hit a couple bombs, and he's like this rookie sensation everyone's talking about. You send him down to manipulate the service time. I think it's just a story of how these major league general managers have just, you know, lost the feel for the game.
Yeah, and I mean, we talked about it last week too, where you were saying that look at the guys that have won World Series recently and how I guess short of a time they've had in the front office compared to like a guy like Cashman and Sabian that we were talking about last week with the Yankees. And it's just like, you know, for the Cardinals, it's mind-boggling because you have 3 Hall of Famers on your team and you're getting cited for lack of leadership. You have last year's MVP on your team. You have a guy that won a World Series in Wilson Contreras. You have guys like Tyler O'Neill, who was one of the leaders for Team Canada in the WBC. You have guys like Nolan Gorman, who's coming up and being a big-time contributor, you know, in the last couple of years. You got guys like Lars Nootbaar, who is beloved in Japan now because of everything he did with the WBC, and he came back, you know, after winning that championship with Team Japan. and being beloved by Cardinals fans now too. But you're getting cited for a lack of leadership on a team that shouldn't be, because you have leaders on the team. You have Adam Wainwright. You have Miles Michaelis. Jack Flaherty's been injured, but he's still one of those guys that still has the potential to be that front of the line starter. And then just there, so after Yachty leaves, that's when that was your leader. That was who was holding everybody together last year. That was the only reason why everything didn't fall apart. I believe there's something a little bit more. Like, there's got to be something more, because that's the only person, him and Albert Pujols, who, if he doesn't have the second half that he had, would be not talked about, because he would have hit 7 home runs instead of 27 home runs to get over 700. But those are the only guys that you're really missing. And I don't know. It's weird in St. Louis.
It's a leadership thing, honestly, Peter. I think it's a leadership thing. I mean, Tyler O'Neill gets benched, like, you know, that second or third game into the year for lack of hustle. And, you know, from what I've seen, Tyler O'Neill just hasn't gotten over it. Ollie Marmol, excuse me, has been really hard on him all year long. I really think the whole thing's just a management issue. I think we were all kind of surprised when Mike Shield got fired 2 years ago. It was very surprising. In fact, I still talk to people about it that are in the Cardinals organization and people who are fans. They're really shocked by it still. I think Marmol, you know, has got some tactics, but when you got guys last year, especially Albert Pujols, besides Mike Trout, Albert Pujols was statistically the best right-hand hitter in all of baseball in the second half. And you had him, Yachty, Goldschmidt, and Nolan Arenado on the same team, and you can even get out of the wild card round. I know the Phillies got hot, but you look at that series, and the Cardinals had a lead going into the ninth inning of that first game, and they collapsed. They flat out collapsed. It's not a leadership thing. That's a management thing. Also, this year, you bench Tyler O'Neill for lack of hustle. He goes out to the media, complains about it. He hasn't been himself this year because of the whole thing, and I don't think he's over it. So I think this is one of those things where you got Nolan Arenado, who went through a stretch where he was 4 for his last 43. Overall, you know, Johnny Mozeliak is still running things in baseball operations, and we talk about these old heads, and Johnny Mozeliak's one of them. Now, look, he's had a lot of success as of late. You know, I'm reading something here that since 2000, the only losing season that the Cardinals have had was in 2007. They only had 78 wins. And currently last place in the NL Central are the Cardinals. The last two times they finished last, 1990 and 1918. So I'm not a guy who likes throwing statistics out there, but I personally think this is a management issue. This team's too talented and too deep for me to think that this is on the players. I think it's one of those things where Ollie Marmol, I think, has just lost the locker room. But ultimately, I mean, you know, the Cardinals haven't had an easy schedule. I mean, look at the Pirates. The Pirates came on pretty strong. You know, Pittsburgh, you know, they got them in a series. They've played the Blue Jays, Braves, the Mariners, the Brewers, the Diamondbacks, and they just came off a 13-game road trip out west where, I mean, they just got punished by the Dodgers. They got punished by the Angels, and they lost 2 of 3 to the Mariners. So the schedule's been hard, but also you can't drop 2 of 3 to the Detroit Tigers.
Well, they've been playing good baseball as of late.
Yeah.
They won today. But
So this month is the month for the Cardinals to get back on track, and it's going to be the real test. Because this month, obviously, you have the Tiger series. You got the Cubs series. They play Boston. They play Cincinnati. And they play Kansas City this month. Reds and Royals and Red Sox, all terrible teams. If you can't finish above 500 in those three series, I think you know it's time for a change at the helm of the club.
Now, do you think that they change management before they start selling off pieces? Because that's going to be the fans' first thing to do is oh, we got to get rid of X, Y, and Z and just rebuild.
No, I think you have to start with management, because this is a team that's had so much success and should be good. Like the Cardinals, it's amazing how the Cardinals haven't been back to the World Series since 2013. I mean, look at some of the teams that the Cardinals have put together since 2013. Without Albert. I mean, the Cardinals have always been good. They just haven't. They haven't even sniffed the World Series, it seems like, over the last 10 years.
I think the last time they made it to a LCS was 2014, the year after, wasn't it? When they lost in five to the Giants off of Travis Ishikawa's Ishikawa's walk-off home run. That was the last time they even made it to the championship series.
Yeah, because in 2015 they lost to the Cubs in the DS. I think they've lost basically in some of the first rounds of the playoffs, including wild card rounds since. So, you know, it's the same thing as the Yankees, honestly. Like, the Cardinals are that next franchise in terms of, you know, history of winning. There's expectations there. St. Louis is a great baseball town, and they're not going to stand for this much longer. So I think you fire, you know, I think it starts at the top. You got to get rid of the management before you start selling, because ultimately, who are you going to sell? You going to trade Nolan Arenado? No. You going to trade Paul Goldschmidt because you have one bad year? No. You going to trade Wilson Contreras, who's in the first year of a five-year contract? No. You trade Lars Nootbaar, who's a fan favorite? No. So what are you going to do? You going to DFA Miles Michaelis because he hasn't gotten off to the best start? Maybe. But I don't know. You know, it's like I don't know what I don't know what the Cardinals are supposed to do here.
No, I think the first move that you would see if something just happens and they're, say, going into June, they're 20-45. They're just like way out of it. I think Marmol's the first person to fall on the sword, and then, you know, maybe the owner goes to Mazalak and just says, hey, listen, you know, thanks for getting me Nolan and Goldie and Contreras, but we gotta do something else. We gotta figure out a different way to get out of the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah, it's like reminding me of the Minnesota Wild in the NHL. They're always so good in the regular season, but can't win the big games in the playoffs. That's exactly what the Cardinals are right now. It's honestly like it's sad because of how well respected this organization is in terms of winning. And they just look lost. Every year they get in the playoffs and it's like, well, first round, because look at the last 5 or 6 years. The Dodgers, better team. The Cubs, when they were on track and they were winning the World Series and went to the LCSs in 15 and 17, better team. Even the Colorado Rockies, 2018. That was a heck of a team that they had. You know, it's like they just keep getting out, to me, they're just getting outmanaged by all these teams over the last few years, which I understand why they've gone through manager after manager over the last, you know, half decade, but still, like, organization's competent.
And I mean, you got to think about it too. Since Tony La Russa left in 2011, it's like they just haven't been able to find a manager that can get him to that next level. We all thought it was Mike Matheny. He got there in 2013, lost the World Series. They're like, all right, they're going to be back. And then all of a sudden, he gets fired. Now it's Mike Shildt. Mike Shildt gets fired after taking over for Mike Matheny, getting them to the playoffs. I believe they won the Central that year, didn't they? In his first year. And then all of a sudden, it's Ollie Marmol, who, hate to say it, Cardinals fans, but I don't think he's going to be the manager that does it, because a lot of reports coming in saying he's lost the clubhouse. And once reports come in that say you lost the clubhouse, there's not a whole lot of things that you can do to get it, to win it back, especially in the eyes of fans and upper management, more specifically the owner.
And I honestly don't think he's going to be there much longer. I really don't.
I mean, like you said, they got a May schedule that's Royals. You said Royals, Reds, Red Sox. Red Sox are going to be a little tough because they're playing good baseball. They just came off of an 8-game win streak. But you have to win the series against the Royals. You have to win the series against the Reds. And you got to start chipping away. You got to start playing Cardinal baseball. And I'm going to try to look up their schedule right now as we're talking, just to see what other games they have in between those series. But I mean, just looking at their team though, like, they got Chicago now. Chicago's a good team. They just won tonight. You got to win 2 out of 3, and then you got to find some way to take 2 out of 3 against Boston, because then you have Milwaukee for 3 and LA for 4 at home though. And if you can find some way to go 4-3 against those two teams, good for you. And then you got Cincinnati for 4, Cleveland for 3, and then you finish off the month with Kansas City. So Cincinnati, you got to take at least 2 out of 4. And Kansas City, you got to at least sweep that 2-game series.
Well, your players got to get hot as well. You know, like, they're not going to do this with Nolan Arenado, you know, not playing well, and Wilson Contreras not up to par. You know, like, Andrew Kisner, like, think about it this way. Andrew Kisner is now your starting catcher.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a guy that's been up and down in the minors, and then they didn't know if they were going to stick him at the catching position, is now replacing your $100 million catcher that you just signed for 5 years. I mean, really, you got to stay above water here if you're Kansas City, because May is a tough schedule. So is June, because you start with Pittsburgh, then you go to Texas. You got Cincinnati and San Francisco, but then you have the Mets, Houston, and you finish the month with New York. And also Chicago for 2. Which is a little bit of a weird schedule, because they have a 3-game series with Washington, and then they have back-to-back days off, which you never see that in a major league schedule. And then you only play Chicago for 2 games. And then July is when you need to start doing whatever it is to get back on track, because you have Miami for 4. Then you have the White Sox, and the White Sox may be even worse than the Cardinals right now. Then you have the Nationals, then the Marlins, Cubs, Arizona, and then Cubs again. Because August isn't going to be any easier, and neither is September. So if you can stay above 500, if you can find some way to claw yourself back to 500, I think July could be the turning point for this Cardinals team. Because then August and September is a gauntlet. You play Minnesota, you play Tampa, you play the Mets, you play Pittsburgh, you play Philly, and you play San Diego. And then in September, you got Pittsburgh, Atlanta, Baltimore, Philly, Milwaukee, San Diego, and Milwaukee again. So it's either going to be a fun summer for Cardinals fans, because they're making this comeback like how the Nationals did in 2019 when they started under 500, and how the Braves did in 2021 where they were floating around 500 and then all of a sudden they just took off, or it's going to be one of the longest summers St. Louis has seen in a long time. Since, you said, what, 1990?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I don't like doing this about, you know, ranting on teams so early, because there's 162 games in a season. But it's the St. Louis Cardinals, and they have 2 MVPs on their roster. It's kind of disgraceful.
Yeah, and I mean, I get we have 162, but we're already a fifth of the way through the schedule. And they just look lost. I mean, they just, their offense is nowhere to be found, other than Goldschmidt hitting those 3 home runs against the Tigers the other day. I mean, they were up on the Tigers at one point, and then they all of a sudden lose in extra innings in game 2 of that series on Saturday. And it's like, I don't know. This pitching is not looking good. Maybe with Contreras from behind the plate, they can find some life, because the ERA to Kinsner is better than it is to Contreras. So, you know, we'll see. But we're fifth of the way through the schedule, and they just, I don't know, they just don't look good.
Not pretty for the St. Louis Cardinals right now, obviously. Not ideal. You got any more MLB before we quickly move into the collegiate side of things?
No, because we got a lot to talk about the collegiate side too. So go ahead, take it away.
Yeah, I think we'll start right off the bat before we get into the gossip, we could say. Let's just start off. We have a new number one ranked team in the nation, and they hail from Winston-Salem, North Carolina, and they are the Wake Forest Demon Deacons. Now, for me personally, who I'm a very big fan of the Demon Deacons baseball program, and I've watched them a lot, they rightfully so deserve the number one spot, but let's tell you why they do. So LSU lost 2 of 3 this weekend to Auburn, and Wake Forest ended up taking 2 of 3 from the 17th-ranked Boston College. And the one game they lost was in extra innings. They lost in 12 innings. And keep in mind, that loss was only their second loss at home this year. Wake Forest at home, you want to hear this record? 26-2 at home this year. 26-2. Unbelievable.
So, except for two games, they've basically swept everybody that they've played at home. That's impressive.
That is how that works. Exactly. So, you know, I'm just looking at their – before we break down the stats, and we'll do it real quick because we kind of did it last episode. I'm just looking at their schedule here. They play UNCG at home tomorrow. That's a guaranteed win. UNCG has not been good this year. Then they go to Tallahassee. They play Florida State for 3.
That's 3-game wins right there. 3 wins right there in that series. Florida State has been terrible this year. They finally got their first sweep of the season, I think, against
Mercer. Yeah, it's
crazy,
too, because they fired Mike Martin Jr. and they brought in Link Jarrett, who was the head coach at Notre Dame. So super weird. I hate when people go conference to conference like that. In Link Jarrett's case, though, I understand. It's his alma mater. I get it. But anyways, UNC Wilmington. Wake Forest plays UNC Wilmington in Wilmington. By the way, gorgeous town. That's on May the 16th. And then they wrap it up with a 3-game set against the very disappointing Virginia Tech. I don't know what their mascot is. I should, but I forgot who they are. So
they're a Hokie.
They are a Hokie. What even is a Hokie anyways? I don't even know.
Oh, it's an imaginary fictionary bird.
Right. I think it's like a turkey or something. I don't know. Back to the point.
No, that's – so quick story. Hold on. I'm sorry. It's my dad called Virginia Tech all these – like way before I was born. So like 25, 30 years ago. And he called like not the student affairs, but somebody in Virginia Tech. He's like, hey, I just have a question. Like, what is a Hokie? And the lady on the other end was just like, oh, it's just an imaginary fictionary bird. So
now, better question is, what is a Demon Deacon? Now, personally, I've seen the Demon Deacon before. I was calling a Wake Forest and High Point women's basketball game last December. And by the way, probably the coolest entrance of all time for a mascot. This dude, if you want to call him a dude, because I don't even know if he's a real living human being, comes out in his costume on a motorcycle at center court with the lights off. And he's got this big mustache and top hat. He kind of looks like a 1900s version of Abe Lincoln and is out on his motorcycle at center court. So it's the coolest entrance, personally, I think, in college basketball. But we're not talking about basketball here. We're talking about the Demon Deacon itself. I personally don't know what a Demon Deacon is. But whoever it is, it's got a heck of a baseball team because they're 39-7. They are 18-5 in conference play, and I don't care that they play in the ACC. The ACC is a really good conference. For all my ACC haters out there, don't come at me, all right? Don't come at me. They're 18-5. There's 6 teams, by the way, that are ranked in the top 25 that are in the ACC. So if anyone thinks that the SEC can't compete with the ACC, you're out of your mind. So, and again, we've summarized this last podcast. You know, we talked about Brock Wilkin. He's got the new home run record. Talked about Nicky Nukes, who's healthy, hit a couple bombs this past weekend. Tommy Hawk, the on-base machine, the pitching, they lead the league in ERA. They lead the nation in ERA. They're just that good. They just are simply that good, and I'm happy for them. I'm personally not surprised that they are now the number one team in the nation.
Yeah, I mean, after LSU lost 2 out of 3, you knew somebody else was going to be number one in the nation. And Wake Forest, like we said last week, I mean, their offense is just incredible. Their defense and their pitching is incredible. They got a top 5 name escapes me now. I should know it, but one of their pitchers is in the top 10 for the draft rankings. He's projected to be a top 5 pick in this year's upcoming draft. For the life of me, I cannot remember his name, though.
It's Rhett Lauder, who, by the way, a dope baseball name. That could easily be the coolest baseball name in all of college baseball, and for good reason. Ready for this? He's 10-0 with a 1.67 ERA. Ready for this ratio? Over 75 and two-thirds innings? 90 strikeouts to 16 walks. And opponents are hitting just 2.13 against them. And he is not even the leading ERA man on this Wake Forest team.
You gonna tell me who is?
Well, so they got Seth Keener, he comes out of the pen. He eats innings, but he also starts some midweek games. He's 6-0 with a 1.55. Then they got Sean Sullivan, who's, you know, Rhett Lauder's not even their Friday guy. Sean Sullivan is 5-2 with a 2.56, and that's considered average on this Wake team. That's still great. My opinion for the most underrated and personally the best left-handed pitcher in the entire nation, Josh Hart. This dude is a joy to watch. He is 6'5", super lanky kid. Got great reach, good cutter, 9-2 with a 2.09. And he leads this Demon Deacons team in strikeouts with 98. He's my favorite. He's their Sunday guy. So if you're a big Wheels watcher, watch their Sunday game. You'll see Josh Hartle, and he will dominate per usual. And then they got their guys in the back end of the bullpen. You know, Cam Manassi, 19 appearances, 10 saves. Michael Massey, who's their setup guy, he throws a hundo. And he's appeared in 18 games. He's 2-0 with 53 strikeouts over 29 innings, which is absurd. So, yeah, you know, this Wake team, I personally think that the Demon Deacons may not lose another game this year in the regular season.
Yeah, I mean, the way they're going, it'd be kind of like Tennessee last year, where if they don't make it to Omaha, it'd be a big failure. So, I mean, like we said in the first podcast, we were watching Tennessee and Notre Dame play, and we were kind of more into that than you know, working that day. It's like if Wake Forest doesn't make it to Omaha, which, you know, at one point, I think it was last year that Georgia Tech was ranked in the top five, weren't they? And they didn't make it to Omaha. And that was considered a big failure at the time, too. So it's like these ACC teams that are in the top five, they'll have lofty shoes to fill because they got to make it to Omaha or, sorry, you know, we'll put you in the top five next year. But, you know, listen. Either play with the Biggie Boys in Omaha, or I don't know what else to say.
The whole Raleigh and Piedmont Triad area is going to be a hub for college baseball in the next month, because not only is Wake Forest going to host a regional and probably a super regional, but the Campbell Fighting Camels are also going to be hosting a regional. It'll be the first time a Big South team ever hosts an NCAA playoff series. So, if you're in North Carolina, you got plenty of good college baseball to watch. And, one more thing I'll hit on with Wake Forest before we get to the juicy stuff is that, you know, a couple of their guys starting to get healthy. And one guy that Tom Walter's finding a spot for is Danny Corona. He's a sophomore. He's from Brooklyn, you know, my kind of guy, New Yorker. Plays a little first base, plays a little outfield, can play some second as well. And he's been in the lineup as of late. And this dude hits baseballs far. I mean, he crushed one. He had a ball last week that actually went over the foul pole, and the umpires called it foul, and they didn't have good enough cameras to see that the baseball was actually fair for a home run when they were reviewing the call to see if it was correct or not, which the ball was fair with the ESPN cameras and, you know, the guys in the booth saying that it was fair. But the umpires just did not have the gear because the ball was just hit a million miles. So Danny Corona is a guy to keep an eye on. Keep in mind, you know, Wake Forest also doing this. You know, Adam Cicere hasn't been that healthy this year, and he's one of their power guys. He's got 9 bombs. And by the way, I had Adam Cicere for a game last year, and he's got the furthest baseball I've ever seen hit my entire life. So, you know, this Wake Forest team, I know the couch is the nickname of the ballpark. It's a bandbox. It's 300 down the right field line. It's 310 down the left field line. I get it. But when you're hitting balls super far, I don't care where it is, a homer is a homer. And it's off legit collegiate pitching in a hard conference like the ACC. So, you know, the Deacs, for the first time in their program history, number one in the nation.
Yeah, and we'll see what they do in ACC tournament play because they're running roughshod through the ACC teams right now. So, I mean, they should keep that they should keep the number one team moniker for the foreseeable future, unless something happens, which I don't think is going to happen in the next week and a half or so, because I don't see them losing to UNC Greenville, and I don't see them losing to Florida or Greensboro, excuse me, UNC Greensboro, and I don't see them losing to Florida State anytime soon. So, I mean, if Florida State can stay close and like the games are like 5-0, 5-1, 6-3, I'll be impressed with Florida State more than shocked at Georgia Tech. That's how bad Florida State's been playing. So I think they still have it for at least another week, maybe a week and a half, 2 weeks going into ACC tournament play, which we're what, May.
We're getting 8th? Close here. It's about 4 weeks. I think maximum 4 weeks away.
I think the
it's
end
about
of
20
May.
Days. Yeah, it's about yeah. 20 days from now.
Yeah, end of May is usually when conference tournaments go.
And I believe if it's anything like last year, the ACC tournament will be where the triple A affiliate of the White Sox play in Charlotte at a Truist. There's so many Truist fields and parks now; it's crazy. We'll just call it Truist Field.
So it's not in Durham anymore.
No, because now that the Durham Bulls are back, I think. Last year it was in Charlotte. I think they. I mean, they might have moved it to Durham. If they did, that'll still be pretty cool.
They used to have it in Durham for a long time. I didn't realize they even moved it to Charlotte. I know one year, I forgot why, they moved it to Louisville. And me and my dad went to that one, but they used to have it at I think it's called Durham Sports Park.
Yeah, the Durham Bulls Athletic Park. I don't know why they have to put athletic in there. Obviously, athletes play there, but...
Yeah, they used to have it there. So I wonder why they moved.
Oh no, it is in Durham. It is in Durham.
I was about to say.
Yeah, it's at the DBAP this year. All right, so yeah. And either way,
the
even
basketball tournaments.
Yeah,
basketball tournaments in Charlotte, I think.
No, it's actually in Greensboro.
Oh, it is in Greensboro. Okay.
Yeah, I actually went. anyways, not the point. Anyways, even if Wake Forest doesn't win the ACC tournament, they're gonna get an at-large bid. They're the number one team in the nation for good reason. Now let's get into the good stuff here. Now, what an academic year it was for the University of Alabama Athletic Department. I mean, if I'm working in PR for that school, I would be scared for my life and hope I would get a big raise. Because let's just list the stuff that has happened in that Alabama athletic territory, and then we'll get into the baseball stuff. So, in the 2022-2023 academic year in Alabama athletics, buckle up, everybody. They obviously fired the baseball coach, Brad Bohannon, amid gambling probe, which we're about to get into. The associate athletic director, arrested. Basketball player, allegedly involved in a murder. This whole Brandon Miller thing, which is the player allegedly involved. Tony Mitchell, whoever that is, arrested. It's a tweet. Whoever sent this tweet out, Aaron Torres, be a little bit more specific maybe when you're listing all these people, just to help us out, you know, just a suggestion. We're nice people. A great 9 months down in Tuscaloosa. So when we were talking about last week, because LSU played Alabama the weekend before we recorded episode 2 of Young Lads. And we were saying, oh, you know, Bama got up 6-1 on Saturday, and it seemed like LSU, you know, they were still in the game somehow. I think we might know why.
I mean, so, and it wasn't even – they didn't even make the bet in Alabama. It was in Cincinnati that they made the bet. It was in Ohio. I mean, and allegedly, we have to use allegedly because this hasn't been
fine.
Factually reported yet, but allegedly, whoever made the bet on Alabama to lose, you know, was in contact with Bohannon and actually on the phone with him, and that's what the video showed. And I mean, it was the only bet that took place for Alabama, and it was for Alabama to lose, And I mean, we're going to talk about it a little bit too, but Iowa and Iowa State now are in that same problem. And it's like, I mean, what are we doing here, guys?
This is crazy. So I'm reading this ESPN article right now. So yeah, it was linked to the LSU game, that LSU series a couple weekends ago. Sportsbook surveillance. I didn't know an app could have surveillance, but good for them. Sportsbook surveillance video indicated that the person who placed the bets was communicating with Bohannon at the time. Multiple sources with direct information about the investigation ended up telling ESPN. The alleged suspicious activity took place on Friday at the sportsbook at the Great American Ballpark in Cincinnati. So how about that? Communicating from Louisiana to Cincinnati just to place a bet on your team to lose, which, by the way, you know, I got to see Bama a little bit at the beginning of the year. An Alabama team that was ranked in the top 25. Now we know why they dropped out of the top 25. And now we know why they got swept by LSU. So this is, I mean, just, oh my God, this is crazy. And also, I'm going to read one more paragraph and I'll let you get into it. Alabama's scheduled starting pitcher for that Friday night game, Luke Holman, was scratched because of back tightness and was replaced by a sophomore named Hagan Banks, who hadn't started a game in a month and a half. And LSU ended up winning 8-6. Now, I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but, you know, here we are.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, that was the only bet placed on that game, and it had to be a sizable bet, because if that guy would have bet like $100 or something on LSU or Alabama to lose, I don't think it would happen. But I mean, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was like a couple of thousand, right? Isn't that what the article said? It was a couple thousand on Alabama to lose, and that's what got flagged. And
I mean, if I was an SEC baseball coach, I'd hope he'd be betting thousands of dollars. He probably made a really good salary for himself.
But I mean, what are we doing, guys? It's like, you see what's happening in the NFL where guys like Jameson Williams and everything are getting suspended for gambling on NFL games or college football games in Williams' case. But it's like, gambling is a big part of the sports world now. We've got to be, you have to be more careful. It's like, 'cause I'm not going to say don't do it, because people are still going to do it. And Bohannon is just probably the tip of the iceberg, because now you've got Iowa and Iowa State guys getting probed, and something's probably going to come out with that, because baseball was included in that as well. And college baseball is already one of those sports that's not going to be heavily bet on. It's not like college basketball or college football where, you know, there's so many bets that it's hard to see what's suspicious and what's not. It's like Bohannon, you have a great job at Alabama. Why risk it? Why? It doesn't make any sense.
Makes no sense. It's terrible. Good on the team, though, by the way, to rally past it, because getting to the baseball for a second, Alabama did take 2 of 3 from number 5 Vandy this past weekend. So
it was Bohannon that was
maybe Bohannon starting to bet on his club now to help him win. Now, and listen, now that he's fired, he can bet on whatever the heck he wants, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of pulled the Pete Rose. He's like, oh, I was betting on my team to win, not to lose. It's like, you were still betting on your team.
Yeah, I mean, this is just super sus. And I hate using that word in a broadcasting podcast, but I mean, this is just incredibly, incredibly weird. So let's get into it. I hope he was betting $1,000, because I got a little salary information for you. Because I never knew how much an SEC baseball coach made until now. So Bohannon's contract goes through 2025. He signed a 2-year extension that doesn't kick in until next season. So good luck eating all that money. And the new deal paid him $475,000. That was last season, with $25,000 in raises the following 3 years. So this year, he made $500,000 coaching Alabama. Why on earth? Now, we're baseball people. You know, we played. I got to coach at points this past year. I'm sure you've gotten into the same thing as well or want to. Why on earth would you risk $500,000 just to place sports bets? There's other sports to gamble on. Bet on softball, for crying out loud. But bet on hockey. The playoffs are going on right now. I know there's probably no ice in Alabama, but bet on hockey. You know, NHL playoffs are great. You know, NBA basketball, the playoffs, right here. You really got to bet on college baseball? I mean, look, I've never even thought about betting on college baseball, ever. I didn't even know you could bet on college baseball until a couple of years ago.
Yeah, and I mean, I think Alabama softball would make you more money than Alabama baseball, too, because
I think so, too.
Alabama softball could actually win the Women's College World Series. And it's, I mean, you're absolutely right, though. It's like, why would you waste an opportunity to have a cushy job for the rest of the year, rest of your life coaching Alabama? Maybe now, you know, maybe he wasn't going to stay there for too much longer. Maybe he was just using Alabama as a launching off point. But I mean, you have a hotbed of talent there in Alabama and Florida and Georgia that you're around. And if you can show that you can beat LSU, if you can show that you can beat Auburn's, if you can show that you can beat Vandy, I mean, people are going to want to go because they're going to want to go because they're going to have a chance of playing against some of those big name teams. And then you got the football team that's doing well as well. And Alabama is a big name school that's had some recent success. But it's like, why would you want to risk that to make a couple more $1,000 where you're already making $500,000? It's like, it doesn't make any sense as to why you would risk his whole career. Cause he's done now. He's done.
Oh, nobody, yeah, no way.
You can't come back from that because no AD is going to justify, oh, you bet on a game here at Alabama, you're not going to do it here at, you know, insert, you know, mid-major school here, you know, UNC Greensboro, you're not going to do it here. It's like, no, it's like he's done. He's never going to coach college baseball again. And if he does, it's going to be for like a JUCO team that they don't care. And it's like he just wasted his whole career because he wanted to make a couple of extra $1,000 or he was trying to help his friend win, you know, a couple of extra $1,000 on a game one day where he was, you know, he's like, oh, I'm going to scratch my starter for back tightness and put in this sophomore that hasn't thrown in a month and a half. And, you know, I'll help him make some money and he'll be happy and I'll have a happy friend. And, you know, nobody's going to know. It's like, well, I mean, if it's the only bet that's been put on that game, you know, it's going to get flagged.
So I want to ask you this before we move on, because you pitched collegiately, NAI, Southeastern. Did you ever start?
No, I was more of a reliever.
All right. So obviously I'm sure you had teammates who started, right? Now I just read a little graph that apparently Hagan Banks, who ended up replacing Luke Holman to start that game on Friday night, was told only an hour before first pitch that he was starting. So you being around the game collegiately, and me seeing it from a broadcaster's perspective and the way how starters go about their business before they go into their routines, what's the typical starter routine look like? You know, I know they typically get to the ballpark a little later than the rest of the team and, you know, they go through their routines and stuff. But the fact that Hagan Banks was told just an hour before the game that he'd be starting is such a flag to me in terms of the fact that scratching the starter for this bet was all for purposes of trying to win a little money here.
Yeah, so I could do it twofold because I did start in high school. I was predominantly a starter in high school. So I'd like to do my routine like we would get there 2 hours before game time. An hour before the game time is when I would start moving my body around. And I knew I would start stretching, start doing my band work, just getting like a little bit of a sweat going, move my arm a little bit. And then I knew about 45 minutes or so, you know, I would start throwing. So 15 minutes or so moving my body around, stretching, doing bands, and then for 45 minutes I would start throwing because I wanted to really stretch my arm out and feel loose and everything. And I would come in and I would work on my grips and everything and do a little flat ground. And then 20 minutes before game time, I would go into the bullpen and I would throw only about like 15 or 20 pitches. But I would space it out in those 20 minutes, especially if we're at home. If we were on the road, maybe, you know, 15 minutes before game time, I would start throwing because I knew I had an extra I had an extra half inning to rest. But in college, it was the same thing. Starters got to the field about an hour and a half before game time and went through all their routines and everything like that too. Because you got to remember, we had, you know, starting lineups that were announced that we really didn't do in high school. So that was a little different. But yeah, I mean, just seeing it from a college perspective too, it's like these guys can't just. You can't just tell them, hey, 30 minutes before, hey, you're starting, by the way. It's like it doesn't work like that. We were told, you know, almost 3 days in advance, like, hey, this guy's going to start on midweek. This guy's going to start on Friday. And then we play two games on Saturday. So this guy's going to start game one. This guy's going to start game two. And it's like even the game two starters would get there about fifth, sixth inning of game one on Saturday, you know, have a little lunch. Start moving the body around and just like taking their time. So just to tell somebody that they're going to throw against the number one team an hour before game time is not just, you know, means for flagging that game, but it's also kind of a detriment to the player because, you know, somebody that hasn't started in a month and a half and you're only giving him an hour's notice. It's like, that's a detriment to the player as well.
Yeah, very fishy. By the way, really cool amenity that Great American Ballpark has a BetMGM sportsbook in the ballpark. I think that's crazy. And for reference, Cincinnati was on the road when this bet took place. The Reds were playing Oakland at the time in the mausoleum that is the Oakland Coliseum. But yeah, so that is how that happened. I think that wraps it up for our college baseball portion. I mean, I'll just... You don't have to say much about it, but I'll touch on LSU and why they got dropped to number two. They lose 2 of 3 to Auburn, and Christian Little was just downright terrible. I mean, you bring him in from LSU, and you bring him in from Vandy, and he's, you know, your Sunday guy, and you move Thatcher Hurd to the bullpen, and he gives up 6 runs, and he can't get out of the fourth inning. Problem. So that's the second time in a row that's happened to Christian Little. So maybe a bit of a problem. Maybe bet against Christian Little if you're out there trying to bet against LSU, who's now the number two team in the nation. But, you know, I think we're going to start something new here real quick, and then I think that might be it for the night. Young Lad of the Week is a new segment we're going to go with here. Now, the criteria of Young Lad of the Week is this. Anybody in college baseball who did something particularly cool over the weekend or is just a downright stud, or someone who's, you know, within their first couple of years of big league baseball and making a pretty big impact and doing something pretty cool at the major league level. So mine is a collegiate player, but before I say mine, I gave Peter probably a little bit of time to think about this because I told him I had this, I guess you could say, semi-genius idea this morning. Peter, you had time to think about it. Your young lad of the week. Who do you got?
So mine's more of like the young lad of the weekend, but I'm going to go James Altman from the Dodgers. I watched Sunday Night Baseball last night, and just the way he's been swinging the bat in his rookie season has just been phenomenal. And then he had the big 2-run home run yesterday against Brett Honeywell of the Padres to help them win that series. I mean, he's well on his way to contending for National League Rookie of the Year. And then the close second honorable mention would have been Josh Jung of the Texas Rangers. But James Altman is my inaugural young lad of the weekend, I guess you can say, because during the week he was kind of struggled a little bit, and he's been struggling in the last 7 games, but, you know, showing out on Sunday Night Baseball with a clutch home run in the 10th inning. And I believe that was his first Sunday Night Baseball game too, because I think that's the first time that the Dodgers have been on Sunday Night Baseball this year. And to do it in that situation, in that ballpark, and for that team, I think was pretty cool. So he's my young lad player of the week.
I like it. My guy would also be someone who might be towards the weekend as well. This is a guy who's at the collegiate level playing for currently the number 8 Coastal Carolina Chanticleers, which I personally don't know what a Chanticleer is, but I am going with right fielder Graham Brown. Now, this isn't anything outrageous, but I thought it'd be a little fun bit to throw in there. Now, hitting-wise, you'd expect me to say he hit you know, did something crazy. Did he hit for the cycle? No, he's hitting 309. He's not a bad ball player. But on Saturday, Coastal Carolina and Appalachian State go to extra innings. Graham Brown's in right field. There's one out with a runner on third. Fly ball gets hit to Graham Brown. Throws out the runner at home. Double play. You go to the bottom of the 10th inning, and guess who's leading it off? Graham Brown, who not only hits a walk-off home run to win the game for Coastal, but caps off a 3-for-5 day with three RBIs. So to have the ice in the veins and the cojones of steel that Graham Brown showed on that day, to be in an App State team that could go either way, I think is something really cool. It's a little bit of a twist on what this segment could be. So I just really liked it when I saw it this weekend. So my young lad of the week is going to go to Graham Brown of the Coastal Carolina Chanticleers.
You know who could have been a close, probably honorable mention for both of us too? His name escapes me. NC State catcher who had 4 home runs in one game. Probably should have gone with him.
You talking about Cannon Peebles?
Yeah, probably should have gone with him. I didn't think about it until you mentioned the walk-off home run. But Mr. Peebles, 4 home runs. He is honorable mention this week.
They got a good little catching competition over there at NC State. They got Jacob Cozart, who's a sophomore. He's not a bad backstop, but you bring in Cannon Peebles, who's a freshman. And, I mean, this dude is really, I mean, in limited action, has played some nice baseball for this club. And, wait, hang on. Was it Cannon Peebles? Or it might have been Jacob Cozart. Wait, no. I think it might have been Jacob Cozart who hit the 4 home runs.
No.
Hang on.
I'm trying to.
Because I did see Jacob Cozart. I did see Jacob Cozart did go deep at some point this weekend. High Point, North Carolina native, by the way, Jacob Cozart. Let's see what we got here.
Harris is desperately checking to make sure.
I'm desperately checking because, first of all, Cannon Peebles might be the best name in all of college baseball as well.
I mean, you have to be a catcher.
Yeah.
With that name.
With the last name.
With the cannon.
Cannon. Exactly. I'm not seeing Jacob Cozart hit 4 homers either this past weekend. So, I don't know who you're talking about. Was it an NC State guy?
I believe it was an NC State guy.
Let's investigate.
Let's see. NC State. We're currently searching for people that are just listening. We're searching for whatever.
I know
we can
the
find.
Wolfpack pitching pitched very well this week, but I'm not seeing anything. Not seeing anything hitting wise.
I could have swore I saw. Let's see. We're gonna do college baseball player for. Home run game.
Now, usually I'm a big follower of NC State, but I, particularly this year, have not.
Oh. My apologies.
We go wrong school.
Wrong school, wrong conference, wrong state.
Uh-oh.
It was Calvin Harris of Ole Miss that hit the 4 home runs.
Okay.
This last Saturday. May 6th. So, my apologies. He did it against Missouri. At Missouri. He homered in the 3rd, 4th, and 6th. And he hit a 3-run home run and then 3 2-run home runs. And he hit his 4th home run in the 9th. So... apologies, Mr. Harris, but that is
okay.
So, Calvin Harris, honorable mention. Maybe if he hits 4 home runs next weekend, he could be my my young lad. You know what? I'm just gonna change it. Calvin Harris is my young lad of the week. I'm gonna change it. James Otten.
There you go.
You know, pretty good. Might be the rookie of the year this year, but I'm gonna give it to Calvin Harris.
Excellent. One more thing before we end the night. A lot of debate on who was going to be taken off the roster with Aaron Judge coming off the IL. So by the time this podcast goes live, Aaron Judge will be off the IL, and the news was just announced that no, Aaron Hicks will still be on the roster, unfortunately for Yankees fans. Oswald Peraza survives. Oswaldo Cabrera survives. It is Nick Ramirez who gets optioned down to AAA after tonight's ballgame. So there's your roster spot for Aaron Judge. He comes off the IL tomorrow. I know some Yankee fans were hoping for some other outcomes, but the three that we debated on survive.
Yeah, they live to fight another day, and I really can't believe that Aaron Hicks is still on a roster.
It's amazing. Nice. I mean, the fact that Saturday he had his first extra base hit of the year, and it was May 6th, is a serious problem.
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand how he's still a part of this Yankees team. It just baffles me.
If you want to hear about how much I feel about Aaron Hicks, you can tune into the last podcast, episode 2. And for those who have stuck with us through the entirety or just checked in on episode 3, we appreciate you. And we love you, whoever you are. So listen on Spotify, Apple Music. Give us a share, a like, a subscription, whatever the heck it's called out there. And we have a good time doing this. We get brushed up on college baseball. We're very excited for what's upcoming because the conference tournaments are coming. You have Sun Belt Fun Belt, which in my opinion is going to be the most underrated mid-major conference tournament we got going, and also the ACC and the SEC and all those other nonsense conference because there's so many that half of them don't even matter. So really exciting time in college baseball. MLB baseball heating up, especially with both New York teams are absolutely dreadful, and the Tampa Bay Rays still remain the best team in baseball.
And hopefully they stay that way because, like we said at the beginning of this podcast, as we're recording this, they won 3-0 to the Baltimore Orioles. So game one of that series is in the books, and hopefully they can win another game this series and take it 2-3. And then they play New York again next week. So maybe kind of what am I trying to say here? I'm what's the word I'm looking for?
You could sweep New York.
I don't know. But no. Maybe we have somebody on the podcast next week that that could talk a little bit of what the Rays have been doing. What's that word I'm looking for?
Is it a surprise?
I don't know. You know, the writers on strike, so the writers for me, I don't know. I don't have my writers anymore, so I gotta just come up with things on my own.
Well, anyways, I could spoil it for you, but I do want to give a shout out to what could be a guest on the podcast, maybe or may not. The legendary Neil Solons finally promoted himself to play-by-play broadcaster for the Tampa Bay Rays on LinkedIn today. So LinkedIn, hell of a lot important. If you young juniors don't have one out there, make yourselves one. And take after us. And take after Neil, because we're proud of Neil for finally updating his LinkedIn. And we love Neil. He's doing a great job. Andy's doing a great job. I love listening to them. By the way, my mother now, who's a diehard Yankees fan, calls me after the Rays win on Sunday. It's like, did you listen to Andy and Neil? Did you see the Rays? I'm like, Mom, you're a Yankees fan. But no, we are avid Andy and Neil listeners. My mother is now an Andy and Neil listener for life. So we love them. And yeah, congrats to them on a fantastic start.
Yes, so maybe we can hopefully we could talk to one of them next week and just see how the race season is going and maybe we could talk to somebody or with you regarding college baseball and seeing where the landscape is as far as conference tournament goes. But I think that's gonna do it for this episode 3, a little late in the making, so maybe this episode is probably not gonna get posted till mid Tuesday. Maybe Wednesday at 12 o'clock. We'll see how I can do with the editing. But, you know, I think, Harris, that's going to do it for this episode.
All right. Well, again, like, subscribe, listen, whatever it is, share it with your people. I'm Harris.
And I'm Peter, saying thank you for listening to Young Lads, and we will talk to you again next Monday.